Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight in the studio is sculptor, installation artist. I'm going to call you that because what you did at FAM is an installation, David Katz, and Fitchburg Art Museum's curatorial fellow, Marjorie Rall. Marjorie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mark.
David, welcome to the show. And we're here talking about Earthwares, which is an exhibition of David Katz's work. It's on view right now at the Fitchburg Art Museum until January 12th, 2020. Now, David, I want to start with you. You work in clay. Have you always worked in clay?
I have always worked in clay.
The very beginning, you didn't do anything? Like, were you painted or anything?
I've done a lot of other things, but that's always been a focus and emphasis of mine since I took a class when I was 14 years old. Didn't take it real seriously till I was 20, 21, but in the interim...
Well, you know, one thing I always ask artists is, when was that moment in your life when you said to yourself, this is what I am, I am an artist? Do you remember that moment, or was it a process? But at what point in your life did you do that?
Yeah, you know, it was when I was 20 years old, and I decided to take an art class in college just for the fun of it.
What were you on your way to do instead?
Oh, boy, I was going to probably be an anthropologist. I was
focused. Actually, that sort of dovetails into what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that the other interest that an artist has in their life, you know, ends up being what plays out in their, you know, aesthetic output.
Now, Marjorie, you didn't work on the installation of this, did you?
No, unfortunately. I really was tempted to get my hands dirty.
This looks like a complex installation. There's two pieces to this installation. There's the whole series of works, and we'll talk about those in a bit. And there's two humongous works that are a process work. In other words, the work changes from day to day, from week to week. Mm-hmm. Marjorie, that looked like an installation nightmare. What can you tell me?
No, it actually, David has done this tons of times.
I know he knows what he's doing.
And so it is about curatorial trust. So we handed it over to David, and he had a couple assistants, and it went fabulously. Everything was done on time.
As soon as I walked in and I saw it, the first thing I thought is, oh my God, he's going to have to come up here every 3 days to like check on this. You do come up periodically, right?
I've come up periodically. They've sent me photos along the way to let me know what's going on. And but I have quite a lot of confidence in the work and its durability, and know that if anything happens, we're in touch.
Now that we've got the listeners like scratching their heads trying to figure out
what's happening.
Let's talk about the installation piece first. Describe it for me.
So the installation piece involves three vessel forms. They are each vessels that are rather iconic from different regions of the world. So there's a Chinese form, a Greek form, and an Isnik Turkish form. They go about 10 feet tall a piece,
just
scraping the ceiling a little bit. And then there is an amorphic sort of stretchy, fluid, viscous, maybe
anthropomorphic.
Extension between them. So they're all kind of linking together in this fluid organic mass. And that's populated, covered with unfired clay, just earth.
So what happens when you put unfired clay in a gallery?
It dries, it cracks, it changes.
It totally changes. And like every time you go in, if like you let a week go by, mm-hmm. something's going to be slightly different about the work.
Yeah.
Now, when I first saw this, before I knew the history of your work, I went, oh my God, this is a lot of trust. first of all, for the museum, and the museum must have been a little bit tense about it because you never know when pieces are falling off. But when I looked at your body of work, you've done many other, actually even more complex installation pieces.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about those leading up to this. You've done series like Mediated Landscapes, mm-hmm. Confluent Systems.
Yeah.
Where did that idea for all of those start?
You know, a lot of it stems from earlier research and interest and continued interest in anthropology, in an exploration of how humans exist within a landscape of our own cultural creation. So those combined this combination of an anthropomorphized clay organic fluid expression coming into interaction with something that was more architectural in nature.
They're definitely, first of all, they're site specific.
Yeah.
They work with the within the walls and within the galleries, as these pieces do too. And when I looked at them, they had a lot of different weird feels to them. Yeah, there was resonance with previous forms, but they are very organic looking, and they actually look like they're alive.
Yeah.
And now, were those unfired clay too? Or
yeah, that's unfired clay as well. And for me, you know, I'm really interested in presenting this friction between the fact that they do appear alive, and the nature of that component of time that you mentioned,
right,
that they dry and they crack and they turn into this ancient landscape.
They do. Surface. The first thing I thought of was a dried sort of lake bed.
Yeah.
When I looked at them, and the pieces had already pretty well cracked.
Yeah.
How long did it take for the cracks to form? That's a doofus question, but it's like one of those things everybody's wanting to know.
It's always different. It depends on the environment locally. So when I built a piece out in Arizona where it's very dry, things dry much faster and crack, and it's a day or two. Here the clay began to form cracks within a day or two. Mm-hmm. But it was a period of weeks until it was completely dry.
Did any pieces fall off?
No.
And so you've been through this enough, so you know exactly what you need to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a moment and talk to Marjorie. Marjorie, this is your first time down the show.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. It's David's first time too, but you're the curatorial fellow at the Fitchburg Art Museum. That has had a string of absolutely incredible people in that role. How did you come to the Fitchburg Art Museum?
So I recently completed my master's in art history from Tulane University. And I wanted to get some real hands-on experience in a museum setting.
You came to the right place.
Exactly. So I found the posting online, and turns out Lisa Crossman, the curator, also went to Tulane. So we sort of...
And she also started out as a curatorial fellow.
Exactly.
And
right.
Never went away.
Never went away. She's still here, going strong.
She is.
Yeah. So here I am. I got the job and
decided to pack up. What's your field of interest?
I wrote my thesis on an artist named Grace Hartigan from the
1950s. I love Grace Hartigan.
Me too. And I wrote about her relationship with the poet Frank O'Hara.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a sort of post-war American focus. Yeah.
That's really interesting, because there's been a lot of historical material that's come out in the last couple of years about the sort of abstract expressionist women. And Grace Hartigan was an absolutely incredible person.
Yeah, and I find there has been a lot of scholarship, but she's always sort of the last on the list of those behind Joan Mitchell and Helen Frankenthaler. Right. So I felt sort of passionately about
She had an incredible life, too, and she painted right up until the end.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, she's great.
Now, look, was David the first major installation that you've had to deal with? And what did you think about his installation works first before we talk about his other works?
Sure. Yeah. So David's show was the first project that Lisa was like, you take the lead on this one.
Whoa.
So
trial by fire.
Yeah. Trial by fire. And I am much more comfortable with painting and 2D work. That's always what I've
done myself.
Everybody's
more comfortable with painting. Paintings don't do things. you can't drop a painting on a floor and it'll break.
That's very true. I thought it was fabulous. I am all about sort of exploring materials and pushing the boundaries of materials. And I feel like David is definitely one of those artists
doing that.
The unfired clay was like such an opportunity to like really dive in. And
Are people photo documenting the changes that are going on as it happens?
Yeah.
And then it's going to be part of the museum record, I hope.
Yes, absolutely. Lots of install shots.
David, what happens to these pieces after the show or after the exhibitions? Are they sold or are they become part of the museum? Do they continue to decay as they go on?
Oh, the piece's life ends at the end of the exhibition.
That's it?
Yeah, yeah. And that ends up inherently being a part of the content of the work, is the sort of temporality and the fleeting nature of it.
There's definitely the representation of the passage of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing more clear than watching a piece change physically.
Yeah.
And clay is fascinating when it changes. Mm-hmm. And also, when I think about clay and I think about those vessels, I think about the history of humanity. Clay was one of the most basic materials that no matter where they were in the world, there's some kind of clay deposit in a river that they can dig up and form. When did you said you were going to be, you're thinking about becoming an anthropologist. Clay seems sort of like the natural thing to have gotten into.
Yeah, I don't think it's the thing that naturally drew me to it.
Yeah.
It was its tactility. It was the expressive immediacy of the material that, you know, relates to. I was a big jazz head when I was in high school, and
so you were alone. You were alone a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I've spent a lot of time in studios by myself exploring clay and listening
totally
to jazz.
It. We're a jazz station
yeah,
here.
Yeah,
no, so
I know
totally
you are.
It.
I'm aware. Yeah, it's a good fit. But it's good but yeah, I mean that historic nature of the material, and the fact that it does transcend time and culture.
It really does.
It's everywhere. Unique identities expressed through cultural identities expressed through this material. Really, it's played out for millennia all over the world, and so
you've traveled a lot.
Yeah.
Now there are obviously unique things to everybody's every culture's clay traditions, mm-hmm. but if you find things that sort of seem to be some kind of universal ideas or forms of how people have looked at clay.
I think. Just the very nature of clay as something that the universal nature of our connection to it itself, I find to be something very profound. The reliance on it for really the start of civilizations and cultures. I mean, it gives the ability to store. It gives the ability to cook.
You couldn't have any permanent settlements without clay. Also, there are lots of myths and stories about people forming, mm-hmm. being formed out of clay too. So there's that kind of connection. There's a creation myths mm-hmm. that center around clay too.
Yeah.
Now, where have you been in the world and looked at? You just talked to me that you taught in China.
Yeah, I taught in China this last year and had an opportunity to take some students there once and then to go and teach at a university.
Was that
your
first time in China?
Yeah, first and second were over the course of a couple of months.
Oh my God!
In China you're absolutely inundated with the vessel form, and you know I'm a ceramics professor. I've been working with ceramics for 23 years now, but I've very much never been a potter. You know, I'm a sculptor, I'm an installation artist, but spending so much time in China where this form, this ceramic vessel actually does hold this significance of cultural identity, really had a huge impact on me.
And is that where the other work that's in the show came from? Because the rest of the work in the show is very different from anything that you seem to have done before.
Yeah, the first piece that I made of these vessels kind of melting and unifying and coming together in this sort of animalistic way was happened while I was in China. I was I was on a bus heading from one museum to another to look at all these pots or to go look at a 1,000-year-old kiln.
Wait a minute. You can't just go over that. So there's a 1,000-year-old kiln?
They're very, very, very old kiln. And
they're not still being used.
They are. Absolutely, they're being used. The day after I got to China, they brought me to this like 1,000-year-old kiln. And they said, what do you think? And I said, your kiln is older than my country.
Oh, yeah.
Right here, you know, it's like this
That puts
history,
everything into perspective.
It's really remarkable. And just looking at the pride in their eyes when they hear that you've traveled there because of their ceramic traditions, it's really meaningful. And that idea of the representation of that vessel as culture, as somebody who was studying, you know, anthropology 15 years ago, it's a natural thing that I grab onto as a symbol to talk about peoples, about difference, about unification, about universality. So that really sparked this shift.
Let's talk about the rest of these pieces. Mm-hmm. As soon as I walked in, I saw them because I taught at an art museum mm-hmm. before. I immediately started recognizing forms, shapes, ideas, mm-hmm. patterns that I had seen before, but they're not copies or anything. They're original forms.
Yeah. They're very strongly referencing very traditional iconic
forms.
They are.
I was a little bit surprised, especially in relationship to the humongous installation works.
Yeah.
They're very different, but it's an interesting counterpoint.
Yeah. I'm a ceramic person, which is objects and dealing with material culture and the relationship of objects in people's everyday lives. I teach it. I collect objects. I collected objects from all over the world that I find meaningful, and the fact that people use them, experiencing them, is really powerful to me. So the idea of kind of being an installation artist who makes things that always end at the end of the exhibition, where I break them.
Wait a minute, you're going to break the other vessels too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, not the fired ones. But for the last 7 years, I've been producing these temporary pieces that are all ephemeral.
Is there a ritual about breaking them at the end? Are you just very...
No, not so much.
You just break them?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually there's another exhibition going in a couple of days, and I've got a lot of clay to clean up.
Do you just throw them on the ground and smash them?
No, well, and I
do you actually, take a hammer? I mean...
Sometimes, But I recycle the clay. It's all reusable, okay. So it oftentimes ends up living again in another piece.
That makes me feel a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marjorie, when you heard that, was that sort of as a museum person, as a curator, does that sort of give you an immediate like? Huh?
Actually, I find temporary and ephemeral art to
really
be very, very interesting, especially because the passage of time, like you were saying earlier, is so sort of built into this piece that the fact that it won't be there anymore at the end just sort of gives it that extra layer of emphasis.
But by and large, people who go to museums are not used to the idea of ephemeral work, especially three-dimensional ephemeral work is a different kind of an idea. Mm-hmm. Those are the things you always think, well, I've seen the stuff from ancient Greece and Rome and Egypt. It's always going to be here unless somebody, you know, smashes it and on purpose. But this is sort of interesting that you do this, and you say, are all most of it salvable, that you can reuse it again?
Yeah, the installation.
So you just wet it down again?
I wet it down and then have to repurpose it. There's a whole armature system underneath it, most of which will be discarded.
Did you always have such an environmental sort of, you know, idea about your work, that the idea of recycling it makes perfect sense to me?
Yeah.
I wish other artists were able to work that way.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's the main pulse behind that, but I'm really happy about that, that I get to continue to reuse, and that, you know, there are much worse polluters out there, but kilns
pollute.
Cooking work takes up a lot of power.
It does. It's a big carbon footprint.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, a lot of it comes to the fact that the work inherently is intended to be experiential.
Yep.
You know, that it as an installation that for those who, you know, might have some vision in their head, it's a relatively small space that's very filled up with a lot of work, big work. It's
there's a huge amount of stuff in there.
There was 2,500 pounds of clay went in there. So it's massive. And in order to experience it and understand it, it actually asks you to navigate through the work underneath these webs and connecting tissues to travel around and like really have to contend with it. So the idea of it existing afterwards doesn't, in parts that are saved that maybe exist, its life is about being there, is relating to that specific space. Mm-hmm. It is truly built to be site specific, designed for that space, and it just can't exist elsewhere. Mm-hmm.
Marjorie, we should say something about the other shows that are currently up
at
FAM. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, so actually Daniela Rivera.
She was down a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, yeah. So her show's called Labored Landscapes, Where Hand Meets Ground. And they're actually, David and Daniela gave a sort of dual artist talk a couple of weeks ago. And it was really fascinating to see both of them speak back to back, because there are these incredible connections between the two shows. They kind of share a similar, the same space upstairs. So it's very...
Well, especially... her hands.
Yes.
And that was for me when I first saw the show, and I looked at David's work, and then I saw her hands, which are miner's hands.
Mm-hmm.
But I made that connection about people and earth.
Yeah.
And looked at your work. Yeah. I thought that was a really great juxtaposition.
Yeah. It's great. Their work is very different and has all of these very it makes the links between them all the more sort of compelling. So yeah, she looks at labor, environment, cultural heritage, all of these things we've been discussing with David. And then downstairs we have an
incredible photography show.
Yes. Sawyer Hilliard, Our Parents, Ourselves is a combined show of Sage Sawyer's photographs of her mother, Wendy Burden.
Who used to be a model.
Former fashion model. She was on the cover of Life magazine at one point.
Still acting like a fashion model, too.
She's
Did you get to meet her?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
Is she still alive?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, both of them are still alive, actually. And so David Hilliard photographs his father, Ray. And so the show combined sort of speaks to the transformation of parental bonds over time and identity. And they're absolutely beautiful photographs.
And then there's another show that's in the there was an installation work.
Eleanor?
Yeah.
Eleanor. So actually, Adria Arch, Reframing Eleanor, it just closed, sadly. Okay, but it was a really cool sort of reactivation of our permanent collection of Eleanor's work. And so Adria Arch created these hybrid paintings, which she calls them. So they're these paintings that have sort of lifted off the wall and become sculptural forms in space. So she looked at Eleanor's work and sort of responded to the colors and the textures and that.
For me, the Fitchburg Art Museum is sort of an amazing experience, having known its history and what happened when Nick came on. But it's become, like, for me, the most fun museum art museum I go to in the area.
It's absolutely exciting.
And unpretentious, which is very, very cool.
Yeah. We tried to bring world-class art in a very approachable, engaging manner.
Just these two exhibitions alone are incredible.
Absolutely.
Now, David, you teach.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me what you teach.
I teach ceramics. I teach sculpture, and I teach pottery mostly at Rhode Island School of Design. And you know, while being at RISD, there's been some wonderful opportunities for collaboration where I've also been able to work with architecture and landscape architecture faculty to develop, you know, ceramic based solutions for whatever investigation and research is being done with students.
You got to flesh that out, because that's one of those things that you sort of described it in a sentence.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure I understand what you're doing.
With the architecture.
Yeah. I understand the rest of it.
One of them, for example, I was, did a collaboration with a landscape architecture professor, looking at the drainage canals in and around Albuquerque, New Mexico, which are degrading, but which are really central to the local landscape, to the local agriculture, water rights and water preservation, and the local ecosystem is hugely important to everyone there, and is a very hot political topic, and I mean it permeates everything there, but they're degrading and they just travel through the city. So we worked with all these landscape architecture graduate students to develop ceramic-based approaches to developing modular components. Like, think an abstract creative brick that link together to fill these ditches, to preserve them while thinking of aesthetics, while thinking about creating environments and habitats for plants and for local animals and ecological considerations. And we got to go to Albuquerque with the students for a week. And
wow.
It was
what an incredible experience.
Yeah.
David, the more I hear you talk, every time you talk, it's always about human culture and society and relationship to materials.
Yeah. I'm pretty obsessed with that.
I know. And it comes out in everything you talk about. Yeah. Where else have you been besides China?
Oh, I worked with students two winter sessions ago at RISD with a group in Morocco.
Nice.
In Fez, Morocco.
Do they have an earthenware clay tradition there?
They do have ceramic traditions. You know, it mostly is known for their tile mosaic work, which is
right,
a big focus.
Right.
But this wasn't ceramic specific. It was from students across the university developing connections with designers and craftspeople in Morocco, exploring their traditions and thinking about how to bring their traditions into...
You're still being an anthropologist.
Yeah.
It's really amazing because you may not think so because you've separated off from so long, but for the person on the other side of the mic here, you're still incorporating a concern for culture and humanity in your work.
You know, I mean, it's one of the things, it's one of the most exciting things when I'm teaching.
It is.
Working with students is trying to get them to not think about what they're supposed to make as artists, what the expectations are, but thinking about who are you, what's your background, what were your interests outside of this, and how do you draw from this holistic experience of yourself to make something new.
Marjorie, we only have a few minutes left.
Sure.
What's coming up in the spring and late winter at FAM?
So
you have nothing in front of you, so I'm surprised you could remember this.
Of course. So in the spring, we have a show called After Spiritualism, Loss and Transcendence in Contemporary Art.
This is Lisa's show, right?
This is Lisa's show. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, so it takes spiritualism as a sort of jumping off point.
Madame
and so,
Blavatsky.
Yes. So we're going to explore things table like tipping. Loss. Yes, Ouija boards may or may not
right.
be present.
Ectoplasm everywhere.
Yes, exactly. So yes, it's sort of going to trace these themes of loss and transcendence and transformation
wow.
and regeneration in contemporary art using a historical movement like spiritualism as sort of an inspiration.
That's pretty wild.
It's going to be incredible.
Are you going to be involved in that?
Yes, yes. We're working on it right now.
What are your responsibilities?
I am helping with layout, helping
nice.
With writing text, doing studio visits with the artists. I'm sort of Lisa's right-hand woman, pretty
Person.
Much. So,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like, I knew this, I've been hearing about this show a long time coming. Yeah. This sounds really fascinating.
It's really fascinating. Also, there are some connections to other museums in the area. So Fruitlands and
okay.
DeCordova will also be doing related shows. So the one at DeCordova is called Visionary New England, and the one at Fruitlands will have this sort of like spiritual connection. So it will sort of
well,
be
that's
like
because
a kind
what's
of,
her name's father, the author of Little Women. Her father, mm-hmm. who lived at Fruitlands, was mm-hmm. part of that one of the weird transcendental movements.
Exactly.
Where they wouldn't eat anything cooked.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was a tough life, and they ended up giving it up on
yeah.
it pretty
yeah.
quickly.
Yeah, so it's sort of this like larger project that will be happening in the spring that should be really, really interesting.
Now, David, do you have other exhibitions coming up in the next year?
Yeah, I'm quite engaged and focused on my teaching right now, so I'm a little scatterbrained on it. I know I have an exhibition in
I'm
June
amazed you can teach. This is much more difficult than chewing gum and walking at the same time. Teaching and producing work is often at loggerheads.
Yeah, yes. Especially when you have to make it on site.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Spend a week building
Do you get to
something.
Use your students?
I had an alumni helping.
Nice.
But I don't usually use my students.
Well, we're out of time. My guest tonight has been sculptor, installation artist David Katz, and Fitchburg Art Museum's new curatorial fellow, Marjorie Rawl. Both of you, Marjorie, David, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marjorie.
David's show, up until January 12th, 2020, is Earthwares. It's at the Fitchburg Art Museum. Don't miss it. Thank you so much. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.